In a few minutes, we'll hear about business majors who need to study more of the humanities. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. On the week the Federal Reserve meets on interest rates and we end the week with the official employment numbers, let's get an expert view on the economy. David Kelly is Chief Global Strategist at J.P. Morgan Funds. Dr. Kelly, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I know you're trying to figure out this economy. I'm having a little bit of trouble, right? We had that weak gross domestic product figure. The last jobs report was, as my grandmother would say, eh. The question is, what's going to happen here in this second quarter?
Yeah, we think the economy is going to bounce back. I mean, that's kind of what this economy, it never is too hot, it's never too cold. It did look a bit on the chilly side in the first quarter, but there are some special factors. Inventories grew much more slowly, government spending was down. Those are pretty volatile. So we think the growth will be stronger in the second quarter, probably somewhere in the 2-3% range. And we also think the jobs numbers are going to look a lot better when we take a look at the month of April than they were in the month of March.
That's coming on Friday. So you think that is going to be a strong-ish jobs report?
Yes. We're looking for more than 200,000 jobs added. You know, there should be a bounce back for some cold weather in March. And we also think the unemployment rate could fall down to 4.4%, which would be the lowest we've seen in 10 years. So, you know, despite the fact that growth seemed a bit slow in the first quarter, the truth is the labor market's tight and it's getting tighter. And then the other thing we're going to be looking for is we think we may see some improvement in wage growth, which, of course, is long overdue.
All right. Well, thank you for this briefing. David Kelly at J.P. Morgan Funds. Have a great day.
You too.
The European Union may want to pull a big piece of the financial services industry out of London as Britain leaves the EU. The Financial Times has obtained an EU document suggesting that the business of finalizing and guaranteeing financial transactions that use the euro might get moved to the European Union. Now, this is big business, which takes a cut of perhaps a trillion euros that move around every day. For some context here, let's turn to the BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker. Morning, Andrew.
Good morning, David.
So what is this clearing business out of London? It's in euro denominations and it's derivatives?
That's right. Now, if you imagine, David, if you wanted to sell me some sort of euro derivative, you could simply do that. But if we went onto an exchange or a clearinghouse, it would mean that basically if you were selling to me, you'd be protected against me failing to make the payment. So the exchange would make good for you if I fail to pay up in time. This is a potentially very important bit of insurance, security of mind, if you like.
Indeed. So new pressure to perhaps move the business elsewhere, but this is a story that will evolve.
What the Financial Times say they've seen is a consultation document that's going to be published later this week by the European Commission, looking at some of the options for these clearinghouses post-Brexit. And one possibility might indeed be requiring them to be located within the European Union, particularly within the Eurozone. But exactly what the Commission is going to propose, we don't know yet, but certainly this does have the flavour of the pressure in the Brexit negotiations being ramped up.
The BBC's Andrew Walker in London. Thank you.
My pleasure, David.
Angie's List, the website that links consumers with plumbers, electricians, chimney sweeps, etc., has agreed to be purchased by an outfit called IAC, an internet company that owns a competitive service called Home Advisor. Angie's List had struggled with its subscription model, says retail analyst Susharita Mulpuru.
Angie's List really for a long time was probably the dominant player in the space, but they, I think, were challenged by the fact that they had a paywall, and what that means is that you had to pay a subscription fee in order to even get access to any of the listings and the people who were, you know, kind of on the plumber listings or the landscaper listings.
Angie's List started allowing people to browse listings without paying first last year, but sales continued to fall. Meanwhile, revenue at IAC's Home Advisor jumped every quarter of last year, including a 35% bump in the fourth quarter. Disclosure, Angie's List has been an underwriter of this program. The most popular college major in this country is apparently business, but how often do we hear complaints from employers that today's grads need better critical thinking, writing, and communication skills? The sort of skills that you might develop by studying, oh, I don't know, maybe literature or history? From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR, Amy Scott has this story about an effort to build more liberal arts thinking into business programs.
A few dozen professors are packed into a room at Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. They're here from schools all over the country to talk about how to bring the critical thinking and creativity associated with the liberal arts into their business programs.
Traditional business programs really tend to be taught from a single standpoint, usually a managerial standpoint. What we strive to do is to teach these subjects, same subjects, but from multiple standpoints.
Jeffrey Nesteruk is a professor of legal studies at Franklin and Marshall. He's leading research to help colleges, from the Wharton School to Mount Holyoke, transform the traditional model of a business major.
So, for instance, in finance, the model says the role of the firm is the maximization of shareholder wealth.
In a typical finance class, Nesteruk says, you might accept that at face value and move on to figuring out how firms maximize wealth, not at F&M.
We linger over that assumption. Say, well, why is that the purpose of the firm? Are there different purposes? What is served if you think of the firm that way? What is taken away?
And how's this for breaking the mold? An entrepreneurship professor has teamed up with an improvisational dance instructor, teaching a course on creativity. Another class combines literature and sustainable food production. Claire Prizer is with the Aspen Institute, which co-sponsored the workshop. She says the goal isn't only to produce more employable graduates, but more responsible business leaders.
And one way we try to achieve that is by influencing what future business leaders learn in their formal education.
Students also want their careers to have meaning, social impact, says Kendi Hess, an associate professor of philosophy at the College of the Holy Cross. And she says they're increasingly discontent with government as the main driver of social change.
And so people who want to fix things are more and more drawn to business as the place where you can get things done.
At a time when all colleges are under pressure to launch their graduates into productive careers, Hess says business has a lot to offer the liberal arts, too.
At the very least, internships and experiences and a chance to take all of this knowledge and information and understanding and dialogue and try to use it.
So by the time students graduate, they'll have the practical skills to land that first job and the tools to develop a meaningful career. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And it was a Hollywood-style cliffhanger, but overnight, the Writers Guild reached a tentative deal with movie and TV studios that should avert a strike. Details are scant, but pay for residuals is going up 15%, and more money will get kicked into the Guild's health plan. Among other issues, writers will have more flexibility to work on more than one show at the same time. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.